You're listening to EPN, the E-Podcast Network.
This is Eric Dye, and once again, welcome to Enterprise Radio, your EPN channel for exclusive interviews with entrepreneurs, small business owners, and some of the world's top executives who are having great success. Today, we have the pleasure of visiting with author Charles Rubin, who is a best-selling author, a Clio Award-winning advertising director, a former Marine, a licensed minister, an accomplished pianist, jazz vocalist, a talented painter, and is known to visit local clubs from time to time to try out new shtick as a stand-up comedian. He is a man of many interests, and he has a new book out, Leaning on Thin Air, which tells the story of the golden age of advertising in the 1960s. It's one of Rubin's five books, which include Don't Let Your Kids Kill You, A Guide for Parents of Drug and Alcohol Addicted Children, 4F Blues, a novel of World War II Hollywood, I'll Get Right Back to You, and Your Other Annoyances, and Hard Sell. Sounds like an awesome listen today. And Mr. Rubin, thanks for joining us here today on the program.
Well, listen, thank you very much for having me on.
Well, I'm certainly looking forward to hearing from you, and thanks for your time as well. Now, your latest book, Leaning on Thin Air, takes the reader into the golden age of ad agencies in the 60s through lead character Bob Bronson and parallels some real-life experiences that you faced as one of the nation's top ad writers in the 60s. What was the impetus for writing this book?
It takes place during the revolutionary kind of it was a revolution in the advertising business and an incredibly creative time. I wrote this book because I didn't want that time to totally disappear. I wanted to bring back to life the kind of people, mostly New Yorkers, rebellious, ingenious, uncompromising, street smart, honest, and even insecure and neurotic. many of us were, who started this highly innovative movement with a vision of, humor and freshness that eventually spread worldwide in the advertising, agencies all over the world, and was in truth another arm of show business, because it was, the commercials, the radio and television. They were little, slices of life. They were like Broadway plays in a way. They had a beginning, a middle, and an end, and they were filled with humor and fun. And people loved them more than they loved the program. They watched those commercials with great enjoyment, much more so than even the programs that were on. It was a time of this kind of innovative advertising joy in a way. Kirkus Review was just about the best review you can get, said of Leaning on Thin Air, that Mad Men never had this kind of fun. But the success of the movement, the advertising movement, proved dangerous to the corporate powers that were out there that wanted to do staid, safe advertising, so that it was unfortunately snuffed out and replaced by what we have today, which has so little connection to consumers as human beings. That's my opinion, but it's also the opinion of many other, people who were in the ad business at the same time that I was. We can't even watch commercials anymore. We find them boring and badly produced and often unintelligible. I can't even understand some of them. They kind of bang away at us and call for us to go unconscious when they're on, or to cover our ears at station breaks. So the only link to the ad revolution that we have today is evidence during the Super Bowl. People praise those commercials, and it's only that one time of the year that really creative advertising goes on. But at any rate, Leaning on Thin Air has a Vietnam War backdrop, so it's also about that. It's about protesters and so on and so forth at the time. It's fast, it's funny, and there's even a murder that takes place. What else can I tell you about it?
And I'm sure there's plenty more that you could add to that, but we really appreciate what you've shared so far. You were one of the original Mad Men. Why were the 60s considered the golden age of advertising?
Well, because that was when it started with a fellow called Bill Birnbach. And he, at his agency, Doyle Dane Birnbach in New York, had the Volkswagen account. And many people won't remember those ads for Volkswagen, but they were so much fun. They were so new and different from the regular kind of car advertising that went on. And Volkswagen being a special little car with a personality, or the Volkswagen bus. My favorite ad that they ever did was it showed a giraffe. His head poking through the sunroof of the Volkswagen bus, and the headline was, "Because you never know when you may want to take a giraffe somewhere," they were just heartwarming, and I'm sure that approach, which while they were doing the advertising to sell cars, still in all, was a cultural revolution, and not just an advertising revolution, in the sense that we could have humor in sales, and people would appreciate it so much. It started there. It permeated down through the 60s. By the time I got into it, it was already in action. I was so lucky myself to have landed in an agency. I didn't know anything about ad agencies. I happened to land in one where they did creative work, and I am so thankful for that because, as I say, I didn't know anything about ad agencies. I wanted to get into the advertising business as a writer, copywriter. I didn't know one from the other. And only with time did I discover that I had landed in a situation that allowed me to express my humor. I am a comedy writer, and I love humor, and I was able to join this army of people who were so amazing. And a lot of them are gone now. I mean, this goes back many years. Well, I was in the business for quite a few years, and always enjoyed it. I worked in many different, I worked in New York, Boston, London, Paris, Milan, Honolulu. It gave me a way to get around the world and make money at the same time. So the difference between advertising today and advertising then was that people enjoyed it, and now there are very few traces of that kind of creativity. And I do, as I said before, I think people have to people don't actually pay attention to commercials anymore. They're just a nuisance. And that's the difference. That not just commercials, but print ads or brochures or anything that has to do with advertising is just taken. It's not creative. Let me put it that way. That one word, creative.
And I definitely agree with you there. It has changed drastically over the years, no doubt. And with that being said, has advertising changed for the better or for worse, in your opinion?
Worse. Worse. It may be bringing in, a lot of money, but I think the advertising itself just – it does – it will. We've lost something over the years. What really occurred was that the non-creative people in an ad agency, they were known as account executives, and they were they were pushed back into a secondary role in those creative agencies. They were told to go out and sell the ad or don't come back, that kind of thing. And I think it angered them, and I think they wanted to wrest their power back, where they had originally been the most powerful sector in the ad business. They would create focus groups where people who were not in the ad business, but they would give their opinion, and from those opinions, the account executives would force creative people to adhere to a platform that was totally unsavory and dishonest in many cases. One of the great things about ad people back then in those creative agencies was that they were scrupulous. They were so honest. They would never. I was fired from a number of agencies because I wouldn't do something that was going to trick the consumer. And that was also a difference. That's also a difference. Today, lots of claims are made. People believe them, and people get burnt. Consumers get burnt. And those days, that bunch of people that I worked with, and there were, you know, and eventually there were, you know, a number of creative agencies would not do that kind of thing. We really sought only the truthful product points, would not falsify anything, and that is also a difference between today as regards then and now.
Today we're joined by best-selling author Charles Rubin here on Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Now, you also wrote a bestseller, Don't Let Your Kids Kill You, a guide for parents of drug and alcohol-addicted children, in which you provide practical advice on how parents can help themselves and families when dealing with addicted children. So tell us, Mr. Rubin, what motivated you to write that book, and how are its lessons still relevant today?
Well, unfortunately, I was a parent who had to deal with this with my beloved children, whom I love my children so much, and it hurt me terribly, and it confused me. I didn't know what to do. There was nothing out there for parents. This book is the only book on the market that focuses on the recovery of the parent. I became so unstrung. I couldn't really operate. I was so worried and so caught up in their choices, their life choices, and what they were doing. And I didn't write this book so that it would be published. It was really just for myself. And my agent got very angry because I had missed a deadline yet again and again and again. I couldn't concentrate on anything, and I was writing another book, and he was furious because it had been sold. You know, there was a publishing company waiting for it, and he asked me. Well, he said it in he was very gruff, and he said, "Well, do you ever write anything?" You know. I don't remember how he put it, but I mentioned this outline that I wrote for myself, for my own recovery, for my own salvation, so that for my own survival in this situation. And he said, "Well, he wanted me to get this book together." He said, "Forget the other one for the moment. This one will be in every home in America." And I don't know if that's true or not, but I know it's in a lot of homes. If The reviews on Amazon from parents who are suffering the way I did when their kids are with their kids on drugs or alcohol, the reviews there are amazing. They say things like this book saved their life. They don't go anywhere without it. They're all 5-star reviews. I'm a comedy writer. I never thought I would be somebody who would make a difference this way. But really, when I think about it, it's my children who made the who are somewhat responsible for this book, because of their, you know, their drug habits and so on, and I applaud them because they got off the drugs. They are happy human beings today, but it was through it was through the pages of this book that I myself was able to come to terms with the situation and get my life back together. And that's what the book is about. It's about parents getting their lives back together, because the fact is that the worldwide drug epidemic is not a parental problem, but a societal one, and one parents can't control. They can, however, even in times of great pain and disappointment over their children, restore their own physical and mental health and become positive role models for their kids, perhaps for the first time in their lives as parents. Because a lot of parents have been so lenient and so on. This calls for tough love. It calls for, you know, for taking back your own life, and that's an example for these children. When those kids witness how their parents are no longer weak and cringing, and no longer victims in their power, but strong, life-loving individuals who are going to thrive no matter what, dynamics often change in the family, and addicted children often go into recovery programs. And that's what happened with my children. If I hadn't become strong through this book, which I happen to have written, it was basically a sketchy kind of thing that I needed to look at every day virtually. Remind myself that I did not cause this. I couldn't control it. It was happening before my very eyes, and was I going to go down the drain with it? I knew then at that point I could not entertain expectations. They were dangerous. I couldn't expect anything. I had to look at it and understand that other people would condemn me when I took on a tougher role, and I had to let them. I mean, my closest relatives and my closest friends thought I was a terrible person because I took on a tough love attitude. And for the sake of my children and myself, and they condemned me. And there is a chapter in the book that talks about that. Other people will condemn you. Let them. There's nothing you can do about it. They don't understand. And it's so interesting that when it happened to some of those people with their children, and they came back to me for advice, you know, I then became their advisor. So the book has been out for a long time. It's perennial bestseller. It's probably sold close to, I don't know what, 500,000 or 700,000. I haven't kept score of that, of how many. But the book continues to give solace and comfort and really good advice and help to parents, so that they can take back their lives, take back their dreams, get back on a road of joy and happiness, regardless of what their kids are doing. And if people look on Amazon, they'll see all these reviews, which stunned me. I mean, I'm staggered by the success of this book.
Yeah, quite pleased to hear that the kids are on track and everything is excellent in those regards, and that's a good report. And certainly appreciate your sharing that from a personal level as well and through your book. Lastly, and I know we only have a couple of minutes left. Now, you were also married to Betty Bethards, who authored the Dream book, Symbols for Self-Understanding, the most popular book on dream analysis. In the world, which has sold close to 1 million copies worldwide, that book still sells today. Why is Betty's work still relevant today, and what are you doing to keep her spirit alive?
Well, I'm the president of the Inner Light Foundation that Betty founded. We promote the work of Betty Bethards, who is a beloved teacher, a guru, and an author, and really a comedian. I mean, she had so much charisma. You could go to one of her lectures, and you wouldn't be able to contain yourself. You would be overjoyed. I wrote her theme line: "Come to a Betty Bethards event. Fly home." Her charisma just reached you, this 5'2" woman on the stage. And she wrote the Dream book, Symbols for Self-Understanding, still the most popular book on dream analysis in the world, with over 1 million copies sold to date. As Betty said, dreams reflect your waking life. And you can find us at innerlight.org, innerlight.org, and learn more about Betty. She did leave us. She passed away a while back, and she was fearless. When we found out that she was going to die, she said, "I'm excited about my new adventure." I never met anybody like this in my whole life, and I never will. I never will, and I don't think any of us will. She was such an extraordinary being, and she wrote "There Is No Death," actually, from a death experience that she had, and she wrote "Be Your Own Guru" and "7 Steps to Developing Your Intuitive Powers." Many books. We still keep. You know, we have sessions. I support the foundation through being a numerologist. I'm also a channel, and we keep Betty's work out there. It's important work that she had thousands of followers or fans, people who just absolutely adored her and adored her down to earth. She was known as the down to earth guru, or the common sense guru. So that's, you know, so that whole part of my life was so amazing and so incredible. Being the husband, I mean, I don't know how I was chosen. I was chosen to be her husband, you know. It was such an honor. So it was so incredible. Of course, we were husband and wife. We had our fights and we did all our husband and wife stuff. But I just couldn't get over how amazing she was.
Well, Mr. Rubin, it certainly has been great to have had you, and a lot of interesting stories shared here today from advertising and your experience in the space, going back from the 60s to your personal life. In your book, Don't Let Your Kids Kill You, A Guide for Parents of Drug and Alcohol Addicted Children, and on your former wife as well, Betty Bethards, and a lot of information that we appreciate your sharing on a personal level. And all these books can be purchased, as mentioned earlier, at innerlight.org. Mr. Rubin, thanks so much for taking a moment to be with us here today on Enterprise Radio. Much appreciated.
Thank you very much.
Again, we've been speaking with best-selling author Charles Rubin with his latest book, Leaning on Thin Air, which tells the story of the golden age of advertising in the 1960s. It's one of Rubin's 5 books. And for further details, visit innerlight.org. EPN.org. And this is Eric Dine. You've been listening to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Tune into our live location as we are streaming live 24/7 around the world at epodcastnetwork.com/live. You can also find our live stream on iTunes Radio and TuneIn Radio, as well as the TuneIn Radio app for your listening convenience. And as always, we thank you for your support and for tuning in.
This is the ePodcast Network.